Good morning.
Good morning.
This is a very important case, and I'm privileged to argue it before you this morning. This is a case involving the importation of polar bear under a rule that had not, a section of the Marine Mammal Protection Act that had not before been used or necessary. It's a liberalized provision of the Marine Mammal Protection Act passed by Congress that was not necessary for use for importation of hunting trophies before the listing of the polar bear.
By the way, what do we mean by trophies?
I'm sorry?
What is a trophy?
Trophy is the memorabilia from the hunt of a polar bear. It's the skin and the hide that's normally put on a mannequin and made into a lifelike mount of a polar bear. It's a beautiful object of art and a memorabilia to the hunter.
I see.
And the Marine Mammal Protection Act has a specific provision recognizing that regulated take is a form of conservation. In this case, the particular population was carefully selected for these test permits. This is the Gulf of Boothia. It's a population that is actually above capacity and has been for some time. The management objective is 1,500, and there's more bears than that. It had been, as a population, that had been under-harvested for over a decade, because its population was thought to be only 800 and was found to be above 1,500. So the quota that was allocated was not...
Can I just be clear? You say this was a population, maybe you didn't say this, but the point is that the Gulf of Boothia population of polar bears was not one of the populations that had been approved by the Secretary. Is that correct?
Right, it had been deferred because they were waiting for a better population estimate.
Okay.
Canada asked them to defer it. The population estimate had been 800 for some time. The when it was found to be over 1,500, which was the management objective, the we petitioned.
So if it had not been approved by the Secretary,
yes,
could the bear have been imported?
Yes, under this provision, but there was no need to, because we petitioned the service to grant the to overrun the deferral.
So the approval by the Secretary is not a threshold to importation.
No, it's just one of the methods of importation. And this these permits were being processed under a different a clause, a new liberalized clause that had never been used because it was never necessary. So this is the different provision that that you're going to hear about in the next argument following this one. So what happens is this particular population was under-harvested.
Is this 1374C4?
Well,
you say it's a provision, and I just wonder, never used before.
104C4, and the other provision that you're talking about is 10C5.
But you're talking about the conservation provision, right?
I'm sorry?
The conservation provision? Is that?
Yes, the conservation, the definition of conservation.
Right.
Under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, in the definition section, particularly includes regulated harvest. But anyway, back to
I'm really not getting what your point is.
The point is this, that this is a special population that really was under-harvested, above carrying capacity, desirable capacity, that was in the process of being...
I don't want to be too blunt here, but you know, I hear a big so what. Under the Endangered Species Act, this was considered, polar bears are considered threatened. Now, that means automatically, by operation of law, they're depleted under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. So I don't understand what all this argument is about, you know, that they're at this particular level. And so why does it matter? Once they're declared threatened under the Endangered Species Act, they're depleted automatically under the Marine Mammal Protection. Isn't that right?
Yes, but that's exactly what this provision covers. When they're depleted, they're still importable in cases where it enhances the survival of the species. So the status of this particular population and the effect of the hunting on that is the enhancement, the necessary management, essential to its survival.
How does importing the hide of a threatened species promote conservation?
There were 450 pages of expert reports documenting and demonstrating how.
Don't give us that answer. That doesn't help us because, you know, you have to identify for the agency and for us exactly what the problem is here. And The question I have is, I guess it's very similar to Judge Randolph's question, which is, the statute says, this is the first part of the statute, that the taking or importation, the question here, the importation is likely to contribute significantly to maintaining or increasing, right? That's what you have to show.
Yes.
Now, the agency said you didn't show that. So tell us precisely what's wrong with that without telling us there's vast amounts of evidence in the record. Well, if there's evidence in the record that's inconsistent with this, tell us what it is. And tell us also where you pointed that out to the agency. Those are my two questions.
450 pages of expert...
I just told you that doesn't help.
I'm sorry?
That doesn't help.
There are four... I need
that doesn't help. You can't... You cannot... That doesn't work. You have to say to the agency, not here are 400 pages that prove our case, but here are the facts that show that that the importation is likely to contribute significantly. You have to have said that to the agency, which piece of evidence shows that, and since the agency concluded that you didn't show that, you have to show us what record evidence undermines the agency's conclusion. And to tell us this 400 pages doesn't do the trick. We have many cases that say that.
The agency has an obligation, Your Honor, to examine the evidence that presented and to rationally contend with it. And they have to explain why it doesn't demonstrate what it's said to demonstrate. They have the duty to examine it and explain their reasons to say or their determination. Instead, what they did was summarily, and I mean summarily, without explanation, without anything for the court to review, decide that it didn't prove an increase in population or maintenance. So it's their obligation that they violated, Your Honor.
Okay, so let me ask you this. So if I don't agree with that, if I think that you have the obligation to show that you're entitled to the permit and that your obligation is to identify the evidence that supports your claim that the taking or importation is likely to contribute significantly. If I think that's the law, do you lose?
Well, I would have to disagree with the court on the law there.
I know. That's how I answer. It's a hypothetical question. Suppose I think that that's what the law is. Suppose I think that it's the applicant's obligation to prove to the satisfaction of the secretary that it's likely to contribute significantly to maintaining. Let me finish my question.
I think that was done, Your Honor.
Huh?
I think that was, I think 450 pages from 49 authorities, three of the foremost experts in the world on a particular population, spelling it out, not only in the original application, but also in reconsideration process.
Right.
And the service denying all of that summarily in seven paragraphs, without explanation, without dealing with the documents that were provided, that show that there was a need to harvest a bear, that there were overpopulation.
Your argument is that in those 400 pages is the proof of your case. And the agency's deficiency here is that it failed to respond to that, right? That's your case.
I think, that, Your Honor, the agency can't just summarily dismiss something or come up with a conclusion without an explanation. They have a duty under the APA to examine it. They have a duty under the APA to explain the rationale why they didn't think it meant increase in population or maintenance of population. And there's nothing for the court to review unless they do that. It's got to be remanded to the agency that summarily dismissed these permits in seven paragraphs. I'm talking about foremost experts in the world now, Your Honor. I'm talking about economic experts. I'm talking about sociological experts. I'm talking about biological experts. The foremost experts in the world on this particular population and its particular status and admission by the service in the listing rule that this population was at least risk, that was expected to have no more than 3% decline in the next 45 years, and that in the short term it would improve, the fact that it was under-harvested, all these things, the fact that wildlife management is people management.
Okay, so let me ask you a specific question. One of your arguments is that tags for unsuccessful sport hunts, right, are unused. They can't be a credit for next year, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Your permit application never mentioned that.
Yes, it did.
It didn't. I looked at it. I mean, you say there's 400 pages and maybe there's stuff in there, but I didn't see anywhere in the application where you mentioned that. Do you want to point it out to us?
This is the most fundamental fact that the service well knows and then dealt with in the listing rule as well as in the expert reports that were attached. The meat of the permit application is not to repeat the words of the experts, but to let the experts speak for themselves. That is that the American hunters, because of it's 60 degrees below zero, because of weather conditions, ice conditions, the hardiness of the hunt, the luck, and all sorts of other factors, they only have a 70% success rate. Now, that 30% that fail to take a bear, that license is not transferable.
Hey,
those bear are spared.
Where's the evidence that supports
I'm sorry?
Where's the evidence that supports that?
The management authority evidence is in the record, Your Honor.
I know, but what specifically? In other words, you say these were only...
They only had a 70% success rate.
Paragraphs, but they focus on some other considerations. And why was it arbitrary and capricious for the agency to focus on these other considerations?
They irrationally decided that sparing 30% of the bear did increase the population. They irrationally decided that protecting the females and the cubs that normally would be harvested and favoring the old adult cannibalistic boars in a population that had too many was better for the population and better for population recruitment. They made irrational decisions about that without referring to the expert reports that demonstrated unequivocally that this was preferred. The service has always understood that that was a benefit. In the listing rule itself, the service recognized that this was conservation hunting, service's terms.
Okay, I actually did go look into the record, okay, just like you want us to do. And in support of this proposition about unused tags, I found this document at Joint Appendix 421. Right? Is that the one you're talking about?
I think so.
Okay. That looks to me like a briefing paper for this case. Where's the evidence? Where do I find the actual evidence that supports this?
When the permits were denied, we could file a request for reconsideration, and we attached to it several hundred pages of expert reports dealing with the issues that, as we best determined they were, from the denial. The summary denial. Mm-hmm. We fortified the fact that this was a better harvest. We fortified the fact that it was important to have the local people be stewards of the polar bear, to tolerate a greater number of polar bear, to value the polar bear. To enter into co-management agreements and MOUs with the management authorities. All these things are necessary parts of conservation, and all these things exist in Canada, the foremost management program in the world that we've obstructed, all right, with a perverse result from the listing of the Endangered Species Act. Now, the Endangered Species Act actually provides that if a species is only listed as threatened, that imports are still to be allowed. The anomaly here...
Can you still hunt?
9C2. You can still hunt them and you can still import them. The problem with...
Even though they're
listed as threatened.
Listed as...
Section 9C2 of the ESA, of the Endangered Species Act, specifically provides that. It's called the Dingell Amendment. Very, very important amendment. Elephants are importable. Grizzly bears are importable. A whole host of animals are importable, and it's very important to the Range Nation's conservation programs. It's the whole conservation paradigm is based upon sustainable use. Somebody's got to generate the revenue for the conservation. Somebody's got to generate the incentives for local people to tolerate these dangerous species, especially with a polar bear, tolerate them at a higher level.
We're not talking about elephants. We're talking about polar bears.
And the polar bear is a marine mammal.
They're a marine mammal.
That's what happens. It triggers a provision of the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which is a fiction, that this particular population is
depleted.
Wait,
what's a fiction?
When it's not.
Wait, what's a fiction? The Marine Mammal Protection Act is a fiction?
There's a fiction that this population is depleted.
Oh,
it's not depleted. It's actually above capacity. All right, it's above 1,500.
You're talking about a fact. You're making a factual conclusion.
It's all in a record.
But by operation of law, it is depleted because the statute says it is.
But by operation of
is
law,
is that true or not?
We have demonstrated yes, but we have demonstrated that the exception for import permits, this one that we're talking about, proof of enhancement through increasing population or maintenance of population, we have demonstrated that in 450 pages of expert reports that were not examined, They're not analyzed. There's no rational explanation of why they don't apply.
Well, let me ask you, the agency focused on, it says it did look at the documents that were submitted, and it talks about the financial benefits to the local communities. But it says that Canada sets the quota based on a sustainable harvest, regardless of whether the take is by subsistence or sport hunters. So they say, therefore, it's not evidence that sport hunting actually reduces the number of bears taken.
Well, it's kind of I'm chasing your tail, Your Honor. What happened there is what they're saying is that the bear are going to be taken anyway by Inuits rather than American hunters. But the reality is when the hunting has occurred by non-residents, the license is not transferable, and 30% of the time it's not successful. So it speaks for itself, there's less bear taken.
What do you do with the fact that this memorandum of understanding, which, again, is in your materials, it's a joint appendix 42, seems to say just the opposite? It says unharvested males and females are considered credits and can be allocated in future years.
That's right, Your Honor, in the future years.
Isn't that inconsistent with what you just told me?
This particular population, it had been under-harvested, they had not fulfilled their quota for years, even though the quota was based upon 800 and not 1,500. They had not harvested their quota. So they have a surplus of adult males that are cannibalizing the females and the cubs. And remember this, you have a choice between American hunters that favor the bear that should be eliminated for good management and keep the population robust versus the Inuits that love the taste of younger females and cubs, that they prefer that harvest. The managers...
Could we go back to the sentence I was quoting? What's wrong with that finding by...
One of the things that's wrong with it is that the bear, the American hunters, are worth $50,000, $52,000, $48,000 to $52,000 is the price of a bear hunt.
That's
conservation revenue. You got to manage the bear. It's essential.
But the agency is focusing on how Canada sets its quota, all right? And it says that based on the way Canada sets its quota, it is not evident that sport hunting actually reduces the number of bears taken from the set quota, nor provide a means to contribute significantly to maintaining or increasing the number of polar bears necessary for the survival or recovery of the species.
I think that's out of context, Your Honor, not your context you've given. I think the service took it out of context.
Letter.
I think that the service took it out of context, and there's only one consideration.
What out of context?
The fact that the quota is adjustable year to year to year to year. Of course, all quotas are. The duck hunting quota is adjustable. So you don't. This year you had to manage for this year, and that's what. But it doesn't change the fact that the harvest is. See, this is not something you and I should be discussing. It's something the service should have discussed in great detail, in its in providing a rational explanation for its decision. But it summarily dismissed all of this in 7 pages.
What's the $50,000 you were talking about? I'm just curious.
I'm sorry?
What is the $50,000?
That's the price of the bear hunt.
The price
to who?
Those are
the Inuit people that have to manage the bear.
Yeah.
All right? That they have to value the bear. They have to tolerate its numbers above normal
carrying capacity. Wait. It's just a fact question. Who pays the $50,000 to whom?
The hunter pays it to the Inuit people.
I see. To get the permit to hunt the bear.
To get the permit and the rights to hunt. The Inuits conduct the hunt. Very, very important. All part of the sociological system. They hunt by dog sled, 700 or 800 miles. It's 40 to 60 degrees below zero.
So it must cost a lot of money to get a bear, right? I mean, it's in addition to the $50,000 you pay to the Inuits.
Right.
You got to get there, right? You've got to hire dogs and sleds, right?
The Inuits furnish all that.
And that's included in the $50,000.
Yes.
I see.
But it's very important. If the 450 pages of reports show that Inuits could not afford to have a skidoo without the polar bear hunting. They can't afford
they
to feed their families. They don't have the meat. So this is more than the polar bear at stake. It's a whole way of life. So it's all tied in the sociologists and biologists, the wildlife management have designed this strategy. Like they designed this building. It stands up. And we're undermining it. We pull out the pilings from underneath it.
All right, so well,
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, you know, the first sentence, Judge Rogers was asking you to focus on the Interior Department's decision. The very first sentence acknowledges everything you just said.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It doesn't change the fact that the service denied these permits without the service, rational explanation or examination
of
facts.
The service acknowledges the contribution of these hunters to conservation and to the support of the Inuits, to the local communities and native guides. That's its very first sentence, but says it then goes on and says, even so, the permit has not shown that it meets the statute, that importing these trophies will support the statutory requirement. Meets the statutory requirement.
Worse, Your Honor, is the fact that the service has adopted a special rule for Alaska Natives.
It's done what?
The Alaska Natives have a special rule that provides for subsistence and recognizes importance to the value of the polar bear in Alaska, its own management system, and the revenue from it, the harvest intake, is crucial to the management of polar bear by the United States, but they won't let Canada do it.
Are you challenging that?
Huh?
Are you challenging that?
I think it's sound, but they won't apply it when it comes to Canadian polar bear in the very best population at the lowest risk in the world today.
All right, why don't we hear?
I just have one question before you sit down. I take it your position has to be that simply because the polar bear has been listed under the Endangered Species Act, that does not prevent hunters from bringing in polar bear skins and as trophies.
If they meet the enhancement test, yes.
Right. Okay.
They have to meet the enhancement test. Section 4 instead of Section 5. Section 5 theoretically has been eliminated.
In the proceedings for listing under the Endangered Species Act, the Safari Club participated.
Yes, Your Honor.
And didn't you take the position then, and I'm reading from your submission to the Fish and Wildlife Service, that listing under the Endangered Species Act would make it impossible for U.S. citizens to import sport-hunted polar bear trophies into the United States?
Well, number one, I don't represent Safari Club, Conservation Force, Your Honor. But number two, that was the solicitor's position that Conservation Force, in fact, adopted. The solicitor went on to say that in the future, polar bear would have to come in under Section 4, which is what these permits run now.
But
they specifically say that in the listing rule.
I'm not talking about the solicitor's opinion.
The rule itself says that.
And I beg your pardon for confusing you with the Safari Club. I seem to remember that you're listed in the appendix, representing both, right?
No, Your Honor, but we were joint plaintiffs in the listing lawsuit.
Okay.
But the point is this, Your Honor.
You don't deny that the Safari Club took the position that once the polar bear gets listed as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act, that it is then impossible for U.S. citizens to import polar bear trophies.
Under Section 5. That's the next case, Your Honor. But this is Section 4.
Yeah, it doesn't say that.
In the listing rule, they specifically said it could still be imported under Section 4. There's also a solicitor's opinion issued during that period of time saying that in the future it'd have to come in under Section 4. And this argument isn't under Section 4. These permits are under Section 4. There's 450 pages of expert reports are under Section 4.
All right. Why don't we hear from the government?
Thank you. We'll
give you a minute in rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Catherine Hazard here on behalf of the Fish and Wildlife Service. And with me at council table is Holly Wheeler of the Solicitor's Office in the Department of Interior. I just wanted to respond to a few issues that came up. The enhancement provision is Section C4, and that's what the plaintiff appellants in this case are seeking to import their permits. Their trophies under. As the Fish and Wildlife Service explained in denying their permits, they don't meet the standards, either Part 1 or Part 2 of Section C4, the enhancement provision, because they failed to demonstrate how the trophy importations would actually maintain or increase polar bear populations. The much of the information referred to by opposing counsel at argument here is not supported by the record. For example, as Judge Tatel noted, the record shows that the total allowable harvest under the 2005 MOU provides credits when a polar bear is not taken, so that
right. But the secretary's decision didn't tell us that. The secretary doesn't say anything about any of this evidence. I mean, the services rejections.
That's not exactly correct.
Really?
No.
Where does it say that?
It says that. I mean, there's no indication that these would maintain or increase the polar bear populations, or that
Where does it respond to their evidence in the quote 450 pages of supporting documents that say that for sports hunters for the unsuccessful hunts those tags don't get reused?
It's actually the Marine Mammal Commission's letter which addresses that more directly, Your Honor. However,
the commission's comments.
Yes, their submissions. However, the burden is on the applicant to demonstrate that importing these hides that were taken in 99 to 2005 would meet both prongs of the standard. And they had provided I don't know if you'd even call it evidence, but the submissions that they attached to their applications speak to the sort of alleged benefits generally of sport hunting. Very little of the information they provided pertained specifically to the Gulf of Bothia. As you acknowledged this morning, the Gulf of Bothia population was never approved under C5 of the regulations
again, that's not a factor that the service pointed out in its rejection letter, did it?
It did not focus on that. No.
Right. I mean, we have to review. We're not reviewing your brief. We're reviewing the service's letter.
Right.
And the service didn't say a word about that.
No, the service's letter says.
Nor did it say a word. You also say in your brief that you say something that seemed quite obvious to me, which is that importing dead animals can't help in terms of conservation, but that's not in the secretary's letter either.
Well, what is in the secretary's letter, for example, the letter on reconsideration, is that the applicants have not clarified how the trophy importations actually maintain or increase polar bear populations.
Okay.
That's at JA 525.
Right.
Now
they say their 450 pages of evidence shows exactly how that's done, and the service doesn't respond to any of that.
It's correct that the service didn't go item by item and address issues, but it's the burden of the applicant to demonstrate that importation is warranted under the standards of the Section C4. They failed to do that, and the question before this court is whether the service's denial on the record before it was arbitrary and capricious.
All right, so let me ask you, as I understand, one of the themes here is that sport hunting advances conservation and maintenance for all the reasons these experts pointed out. And the argument, as I understand it, is that if you have an activity that promotes conservation and maintenance, what more need you demonstrate to get this permit that would allow you to import these trophies that were obtained in the exercise of this sport hunting activity?
Well, I guess I have a number of responses to that. First of all, Congress created C5 after C4 already existed. And C5 is the specific provision for trophy imports. And it limits trophy imports only to populations that have been approved because they services determined that they're
right.
sustainable.
And I went through that with counsel, and he said, no, we're just under C4.
Right. But if it were the case that sport hunting in Canada of polar bears as a general matter enhances the likelihood of survival or recovery of a species or stock, then there would have been no need to create C5 for importation. It has to be that Congress enacted C5 after C4 existed because importation does not, in general, enhance the likelihood of, I'm sorry, I don't have the wording exactly right, but is not consistent with enhancing the survival of the species or stock. Otherwise, there would have been no need for that provision. But moreover, the C5 provision just requires a finding that the sound science supports the quota and that it will preserve a sustainable level. This must actually enhance, which is a more demanding requirement. If this Gulf of Bothnia population could not even meet the sound science sustainable requirement under C5, it is eminently reasonable for the service to determine it doesn't meet the enhancement requirement, especially given that a lot of the arguments that the plaintiffs make in this case are that it could have future benefits to have some kind of conservation program or sport hunting program. But we're not talking about a prospective hunt. We're talking about a hunt that took place when these hunters knew the population was not approved because the Fish and Wildlife Service concluded that the population information was inadequate to...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but you agreed with me that rationale is not in the services letter. I mean, the services letter, the question before us is whether... the ultimate conclusion, the only conclusion in this letter is, quote, it is not evident that sport hunting actually reduces the number of bears taken. That's what we're reviewing. We're not reviewing anything else, right?
On appendix 525.
Yeah, there's a second part of the sentence, and I don't know what that means. Maybe you can tell me.
But
that's the sentence we're reviewing,
I'm
right?
I'm sorry, are you reading the reconsideration letter or the
initial letter? We can get to that in a minute. I'm reading from the first letter. Therefore, it is not evident that it actually reduces it from the...
This is J509.
Yeah.
Right.
Nor provides...
Bottom line.
Whatever the rest of that
is,
okay?
To contribute.
Yeah, nor provides... That's it. Now, that may be perfectly fine, but we're not reviewing any... There's no other reason that the service gave here. That's it.
Well, except in the letter for reconsideration, there's a little bit more of an explanation.
All right.
That's it.
Let's look at that.
525.
But the importation of sport trophies had to contribute directly and significantly. That's all they say. They say it's the same thing. The bottom line, as I understand it, is that, and this may be right, but the reasoning we are reviewing is the service's conclusion that the importation of these trophies will not contribute to increasing or sustaining the population. That's it. That's what we're reviewing.
Yeah.
Is that
they failed to clarify how trophy importations actually maintain or increase polar bear populations, and that statement is correct.
And how do we? All right. What?
Because the only evidence...
I mean, that sounds like they're just repeating the statute. The statute says...
Well, it might... I'm sorry, Your Honor. I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, I wasn't. I don't need to read you the statute. It just looks like it's saying the statute says... the first part says, the importation is likely to contribute significantly. That's what the statute says. They have to show that. And the secretary says they haven't shown that. Right?
Right.
Okay.
They haven't shown that. And...
Now, normally when we look at an agency decision like that, we look to see what the evidence is that supports that conclusion or some reasoning as to why.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a little bit more reasoning in the Marine Mammal Commission's letter, which... Uh-huh.
In the what letter?
Marine Mammal Commission's letters. But
so you,
Your
you,
Honor
you,
is correct you, that there is not a lot of explanation in these letters that deals with the evidence submitted. However, the evidence submitted was primarily either very old material that predated the agency's determinations in 1997 and 2001 that sport hunting in the Gulf of Bithynia should not be approved for trophy imports.
And that's not mentioned in this letter, is it?
That is not mentioned in this letter.
Uh-huh.
No. Perhaps your answer to my question, though, was trying to explain the next sentence in the reconsideration denial, where it says, while sport hunting and the import of the resulting trophies in the United States may provide some conservation benefits, these activities in and of themselves do not meet the requirements of enhancement under the Marine Mammal Protection Act.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, are you on 510?
That's 510? On JA 526, or Appendix 526. It's the first full paragraph. See the sentence? It's
yes,
hard.
I do.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I guess
in other words, that is your response in part that we have to read the letter in the context of the statutory scheme that's set up. And so that sentence implicitly says, well, you can't get in under 5, but you also can't get in under 4.
Right. In the context of the statutory scheme and the service's actions historically with respect to the Gulf of Bithynia population in particular. You know, it was not writing...
Judge Tatel's point here is that may all be true, but it's not referenced anywhere in the denials, even by a cross-reference to something.
Right. I mean, this is a bit different than the usual arbitrary and capricious review, because the burden here is on the applicant to show that the applicant, the applicant must demonstrate that it meets the requirements. And here, there's really no information provided about how importation of these old, long ago hunted trophies would enhance the population. All of the information provided is just his general statements about the benefits of sport hunting. So they did not meet their burden. Usually when an agency makes a decision, it has to set forth, you know, its rationale. Here the burden is on the applicant to demonstrate, and they failed to do so. And for that reason, the agency's decision was not arbitrary and capricious.
All right.
Yeah,
Thank you, counsel. All right, counsel for appellant, we'll give you 1 minute.
I think the cardinal parts of this have been admitted, Your Honor. I think this is an unusual decision where they didn't explain their rationale, although there was a great abundance of evidence by the foremost experts in the world. I think it was summarily decided that imports were not going to be granted without rationale or explanation or examination. Thank you, Your Honor.
Can you just respond to counsel for the government without going through your 450 pages, can you tell me how importing a polar bear hide that was from a bear that was killed many years ago enhances the satisfies Section 4?
It, number one, is large adult cannibalistic male. It improved the population by eliminating this surplus animal.
That bear is already eliminated. My question is, how does importing that bear's hide enhance conservation of polar bears?
It was taken, Your Honor, and the price was paid, and that revenue that generated from it on the basis that there was an assumption that it would be importable.
That's sunk cost. That's over. That's counsel's point. That's counsel's point. But how does now, today, importing that hide satisfy the requirement that it is likely to contribute significantly to increasing the distribution or numbers necessary to maintain the polar bear population?
I would suggest that
if that hide comes, let me put it this way. Let's suppose the hide is imported, yeah, and it's now hanging on the wall someplace in Louisiana or wherever. How did that act increase the likelihood of preserving polar bears in Canada?
It suggests to the communities that there's some hope that the polar bear is valuable, and that there's a reason to tolerate it today, because there is a possible, not impossible, but possible for Americans to hunt. The prices go up. Whether or not they are able to import the polar bears in the hopes that they can, just like in this particular population, when there was a population study that showed that it should not be deferred any longer, people started hunting them. That expectation makes the leverage to make the local people be good stewards. It's also to generates revenue tomorrow and the next day and for the next year until the next permits come up. And this is next time, hopefully, the service will be fairer, at least specify reasons for the denial.
Does the hunter have to pay an additional fee to have the hide imported? A fee to the government?
Yes.
The United States government?
Yes, Your Honor.
The Canadian government?
There's a provisions for that, yes, Your Honor. But all of that's additional revenue. But it's more important about how it affects future hunts, that the hunters will be drawn and the communities will be incentivized to develop systems that will satisfy the United States. This is a leverage, because they're not our species. We don't have jurisdiction over them. We have to use leverage to guide developing nations on how to manage their species. That's all the Endangered Species Act that works that way, because we don't provide benefits for foreign species. What we can do is give guidance to them. If you do this, you'll have the benefit of the American hunter, the biggest market in the world, and generate $50,000 when it was only $600 for a pelt.
Okay, I got it. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll take the case under advisement.